Welcome, everybody. This is David Corus, Board Chair. It is 12:03 p.m. I'm going to call the meeting to order. I'm going to start with roll call in no particular order. I am obviously present. John Johnson. John was here a moment ago.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. Yeah.
No worries. We like folks staying on mute when they're not talking. We appreciate that. I think I heard John Flores just join.
Present, yep.
Yep, great. Thanks, John. Tom Patton.
Field Chris.
Okay, and then that was Felix that I just heard, right? Felix, was that you just joining?
It was. A present. Sorry. Really
okay. Late. Great. No, no worries. Thanks. And I heard Tom Patton say he's here. Paul Hinch?
Here.
Alexandra Daum?
Here, David.
Thank you. Brian Thompson?
I am here.
Carlo Leone?
Present.
Grant Westerson?
Present.
Tom Gill?
Here.
Dave Perillo?
Here.
Larry McHugh?
Here.
Judy Scheifel? Okay, Judy is not present, and Parker Wise is not present. Thank you, everyone else, for attending. We have a quorum. Next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes of our August 16th regular meeting. I will entertain a motion, a second, and then we can have any discussion that there might be.
I'll move it.
Okay, moved by John Johnson. Is there a second? A second by Grant. Any comments, discussion, requested changes on the minutes? Okay, all those in favor of approving, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions?
David, this is Tom Patton. I'll abstain. I was not there.
Yep, noted. Any other abstentions? Okay, next item on the agenda is public comment. Andrew, please open the line and remind folks the way to get off mute.
Sure. The public line is open. If there are any members of the public who wish to speak, please press star 6 to unmute your line, and then please state your name.
Paul Formica.
Hey, Senator Formica, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon to you and good afternoon to everyone. I would like to ask the Port Authority to consider putting out some information regarding the positive changes that seem to be occurring with the legal challenges that we've, as a state, have made against New York for the dredging, and what that would mean moving forward as far as the port's authority and how that would affect small ports around the state as well as some of the larger ports, and a follow-up as to what the authority's plan is to promote small ports. And I know that you've been preoccupied predominantly with the New London State Pier, and I see something on the agenda regarding New Haven. But we haven't heard much about small ports, so I'm hoping that that'll get on a future agenda or some kind of release, if you could tie those two opportunities together. And then I see item number 7 on the agenda today having to do with negotiate and enter into another amendment. I understand that there may be an increase in the budget to the construction of the state pier. And I'm hopeful that there'll be some explanations as to why that occurred and what, if any, future amendments may be anticipated, if that amendment that I'm referring to is for that item. So thank you all very much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak and say hello to each of you.
Great. Thank you, Senator. I'll just note briefly that at our last meeting, we did approve the next round of ship grants and small harbor grants. So we do our best to remain focused on the working harbors in addition to the work that we're doing in New London and New Haven. But the point about the dredge lawsuit is very well taken, and I think we will have a future agenda item to make sure that everyone understands the implication of that great work on behalf of many constituents, many players, yourself included, to make sure that we have greater flexibility with dredging going forward, and we should spend some time on that to make sure not only that people understand the outcome of that lawsuit, but its implications for the communities of our state. So thank you for raising that. And we will talk in great detail about the amendment to the project that will be coming later today, but I'll give a small preview to say not requesting any additional state dollars at this time, which is probably the headline that most folks are looking for. Other members of the public.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, am I recognized?
Could you state your name, please?
Yes, Peter Olson.
Yep, go right ahead.
My question to the floor. Pardon?
Oh, go ahead. I just said go right ahead.
Okay. I'm wondering when the port will be turned over to, is scheduled to be turned over to Gateway, and when they will start paying their lease again, and what would be the minimum monthly amount of the lease that they will be expected to pay the state, and when the Port of New London will start bringing in some money for the state as opposed to just costing money. And I hope that comes up in the meeting today. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just say briefly, and we'll hear a lot more about this, but, you know, operations are still anticipated to commence this spring and start bringing revenue into the Port Authority in the state. Other members of the public wish to speak at this time. Okay, hearing none, and I'll just remind folks to mute your lines when you're not speaking to avoid as much background noise as possible. Next item on the agenda is the Executive Director's update, and Ulysses, I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon to the board, and let me start by apologizing to the board for the lateness of some of our material reaching you. It's not something that we customarily do, but I wanted to just profusely apologize to you for the lateness of that material. There are, of course, you know, reasons for it, but it's the kind of thing we try to avoid at all costs, and we will continue to do that. Let me start by also picking up on the Eastern Long Island dredge material decision that was recently issued. On Friday, September the 2nd, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit issued its decision upholding the United States Environmental Protection Agency Region 1 December 2016 designation of the Eastern Long Island Sound dredge material disposal site off the coast of New London. The authority was proud to lead the coordination of an amicus brief, which was initially filed in the district court in May of 2019. The authority covered the legal costs associated with developing the brief and filing at both the district and circuit courts. The amicus curiae brief was filed on behalf of the authority, Connecticut Marine Trades Association, Connecticut Maritime Coalition, Cross Sound Ferry, Electric Boat Corporation, New Haven Port Authority, Southeastern Connecticut Council of Governments, Lower Connecticut River Valley Council of Governments, South Central Regional Council of Governments, Metropolitan Council of Governments, and Western Connecticut Council of Governments. John Casey of Robinson & Cole was the author of the brief and facilitated the coordination of interested parties. You can only imagine how delighted, pleased, and satisfied he was as we met with Congressman Courtney and Attorney General Tong to recognize the significance of this decision. Brian Thompson, I'm sure, is in a position to add more about this because he was also intimately involved and knows very well and personally the impact that this decision is having and will have in Connecticut. Let me move on to the state government reporting. Earlier this month,
Ulysses, yes. Before you continue, could everybody please check their phones to make sure you're on mute? There's substantial background noise from somebody. Thank you very much.
He didn't mean you, Ulysses.
Okay. State government reporting. After review by DAS and OPM, as is required, the authority submitted its quarterly report to the Transportation Department pursuant to Public Act 21-179, which includes the status of pending and current contracts, small harbor projects, and the construction project at State Pier. Moreover, the authority is preparing an FY 2023 quarterly report for the Office of Fiscal Analysis. Let's move on to financial management, where Finance Director Veronica Calvert and our fiscal analyst, Lori Epler, continue really to box well above their weight when it comes to the volume of demands we place on them daily and place on this very lean unit. They continue to work with the Office of Policy and Management on core requirements for entering purchase orders, vouchers, and processing payments through the state core financial system. They update the project budget report monthly to record transfers and disbursements made through CORE by the State Treasurer's Office. It should be noted that OPM continues to work with the Finance Office on using the CORE STARS program for payroll and SHIP projects. Later on the agenda of the board, we will request an extension of the MOU with OPM. Bank reconciliations for August and September are underway. This unit has devoted a considerable amount of time and energy pulling and researching a mountain of documents and reports as requested by the state auditors who are conducting the FY 20 and 21 biennial audit while simultaneously responding to requests of auditors conducting the CPA 2022 audit while simultaneously keeping up with what we call quote-unquote normal day-to-day finance operations. The office also continues to meet weekly with OPM on the state bond allocation Excel file developed by OPM to account for all deposits and withdrawals for prior years, as well as working with the Office of Budget and the State Treasurer's Office to complete bond tax questionnaires. I reported to you at our last meeting that as an additional financial management action and operational cost-saving measure, that I decided to sell the CPA 2018 Ford Explorer. Breaking news, we have successfully transferred the vehicle to the Department of Administrative Services, their surplus property program. The proceeds of the sale minus administrative fees will be returned to the authority and deposited into our operations account. I'd like to hold for right now my discussion regarding New Haven Harbor Navigation Improvement Project until we reach agenda number 9. Moving on to the Pier 7 Fort Trumbull project. The purpose of the proposed project is to reconstruct or replace existing elements of the pier. Permitting, coordination by GZA continues, and a joint permit application to DEEP as well as the Army Corps of Engineers was filed just last week. Moving on to Ship 3 and Ship Round 3. When it comes to the ship program, the CPA board at its August meeting approved an allocation request, as you recall, for 10 ship projects in 7 municipalities. The authority will seek to go before the Bond Commission in December for a ship allocation of $5.9 million. As you may recall, the projects are in the towns and cities of Brantford, Guilford, Stonington, Stratford, Norwich, Stamford, and Norwalk. Moving on now to the Connecticut State Dredge Team. We received $3 million in planning assistance to prepare a comprehensive plan for dredged material disposal facility siting in Long Island Sound. We have also received a response from the Corps regarding the planning aid to states, which has kickstarted discussions regarding the development of the scope and cost of the study. At the September 13 dredge team meeting of representatives from Corps, DEEP, and Connecticut Marine Trades, the discussion and primary focus was to provide the Corps input and guidance relative to the scope of the study. Joe Salvatore and Crystal Kallenberg are co-chairs of the team. Just as a way of noting, in terms of the NOAA and Deep Coastal Projects meeting, NOAA conducted its annual review of the state's coastal management program on September the 28th at Avery Point, representing the CPA to discuss dredging issues facing the state was our own dredge guru, Joe Salvatore. Moving on now to the administrative.
Ulysses?
Yes.
Ulysses, John here. I have a quick question. Is any of the money from the Connecticut State Dredging Team that we're getting going to be able to be used for the New Haven Harbor costs that we're going to pick up, or are those totally separate?
They are separate. This is Joe Salvatore. The $3 million was a separate authorization, so we have a separate and distinct authorization for the New Haven Harbor project.
Okay, I was just hoping we could have used some of that, but all right, thanks.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in just a few minutes.
Okay.
All right. Let me also now report on what we call the administrative hearing that's coming up. With respect to the board authorized administrative hearing for the pilot who is the subject of the cargo vessel Great Comfort grounding. I first must caution the board that there is very little I can say and that we can also discuss regarding this contested case, where the respondent has certain constitutional rights that must be protected prior to a hearing. I can, however, and will update you on the process to date, and on the advice of counsel, refrain from discussing the substance of this matter, especially anything relative to the alleged actions of the respondent. After our last meeting, I sent a letter to the respondent pilot on July 6, 2022, advising that the CPA board, upon a June 7, 2022 recommendation of the pilot commission, had passed a resolution authorizing the executive director to initiate a contested case administrative hearing regarding the reported grounding. The respondent was advised of the following: that my office was preparing a hearing which would be held in accordance with the regulations of Connecticut state agencies, sections 15 and 13. Also, that as part of the regulations process, the respondent would receive a formal citation and notice of hearing once the hearing was scheduled. I also advised the respondent that I was available if the respondent cared to discuss any of these matters, as well as the respondent acknowledged receipt of these materials on July the 9th. To date, several procedural steps have occurred. For example, a consulting services agreement has been executed with a retired judge to serve as the presiding officer of this administrative hearing. The retired judge has extensive administrative hearing and maritime experience. Also, a citation and notice of hearing was issued to the respondent on October the 11th. Next, the respondent acknowledged receipt of that citation and notice on October the 13th. And finally, the administrative hearing is scheduled for November the 3rd, 2022. This board should note that this is the first administrative hearing conducted by the CPA. A contested case of this nature has not been heard in Connecticut for over 15 years, which was overseen at that time by the Department of Transportation. I consulted with former DOT agency personnel, former pilot commissioners, and AG office personnel, who could shed some light on how this type of matter was conducted. DAS was particularly helpful regarding the procurement regulations and formatting of a request for services form. This is really the sum and substance of what I can share at this time with the board.
Ulysses, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
It's John. Are we picking up the legal expenses involved in this case? I assume we are, because we get revenue from the pilots, right? So
That is true.
Okay.
John, that is true.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I'd like
Ulysses,
to probably end. Yes.
Ulysses, this is Dave Perillo. I have a question too.
Yes.
The pilot commission brought this to the Port Authority in their June meeting. And I spoke at that point how important it was to take this seriously and get this project done. I've been on the pilot commission, I don't know, 23, 24 years. So I'm familiar with the hearings that were held in the past. Generally, these hearings are held within 45 days of the incident. And we're now 5 months later. And I think we have to move quicker when it relates to something that may or may not jeopardize safety in our ports. Again, I'm not addressing the incident, but when there is an incident that was fully investigated by the Coast Guard, they recommended that the state move on it with the hearing 5 months ago, or actually the Coast Guard recommended it before that.
This is way too long. We can't continue to operate with this length of time to address a situation that could be very critical. So I hope that changes in the future.
And it will change in the future because that process has now been established. This is the first time, as I indicated, that this has occurred for the CPA. I had to actually establish the process from the ground up, and that process now has been established. So anytime this happens in the future, I totally agree with you that we will be in a position to act more expeditiously on this matter, on matters of this nature, because they are very serious. They are very serious matters. Totally agree.
We have two sitting pilot commissioners that are attorneys. They were there way back when. They could have given you all the information you needed based on what was done through the DOT. One of those attorneys also had participated in several hearings. So the knowledge was right there in our own pilot commission, and I think you should have gone in that direction first before you started talking to former commissioners and retired people within the state. So in the next time, address it with our own pilot commission first, please.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to another request that I received. I've been asked to provide an analysis relative to the return and what was termed at the time as a return on investment of the state's New London Pier Improvement Infrastructure Project. The analysis below and the analysis that I'm submitting to you is based on my reading of the project's executed agreement to date. In my experience, return on investment, or an ROI, is an atypical measurement when assessing the efficacy of capital construction, infrastructure improvement, and or maintenance of public assets. It is more common, though highly complex, to complete a benefit cost analysis, or what is called a BCA, that identifies the various direct and indirect benefits of public infrastructure projects and improvements. Given that many of the benefits accrue to society at large, the environment, or in other difficult to quantify ways, BCAs are cost intensive and, to my knowledge, one was not developed for this project. Despite that, however, as described in very modest and reasonable terms below and coming up, the quantified direct benefits alone are significant. And when coupled with future direct benefits, they are still subject to negotiation, as well as indirect benefits. The quantifiable benefits far exceed the state's expenditures. As of July 2022, the total public expenditure authorized by the Connecticut General Assembly and allocated by the State Bond Commission to this project is $178 million. In 2019, the CPA executed a 20-year concession agreement with terminal operator Gateway. The concession agreement includes two additional 10-year lease options. The terms of those two options remain to be negotiated. In 2020, the authority executed a harbor development agreement, or an HDA, with terminal operator Gateway and joint venture partners Ørsted and Eversource, who are collectively refer to as the Northeast Offshore, or NEO. The HDA includes a 10-year sublease of the facility by NEO, along with an additional 7-year sublease option. The terms of the 7-year option remain, again, to be negotiated. The purpose of the HDA was to redevelop the State Pier into a state-of-the-art, heavy-lift-capable port facility. In the near term, the improvements meet the specifications required by the offshore wind industry for staging and assembly operations. but the improvements are not WIN specific. In the long run, the improvements benefit the port's growth by increasing its capacity to accommodate heavy lift cargo for decades to come, while maintaining and enhancing its freight rail link. In support of the state's $178 million commitment and committed investment to this facility, in accordance with the HDA, NEO has contributed an additional $77.5 million to the project to date. Based on executed contractual agreements, by the end of the 10-year, that is between 2023 and 2033, sublease of the State Pier facility by NEO, the CPA and State Pier will have received investment and revenue of at least $117,500,000 from the private sector. What does that consist of? It consists of $20 million to the CPA in lease payments from NEO, per the HDA, I might add. It also consists of a projected minimum of $5 million in additional funding to the CPA in revenue share payments from Terminal Operator Gateway, according to the concession agreement. It also includes $77.5 million in facility capital improvements from NEO, per the HDA, along with $15 million in prorated facility equipment investment from Gateway per the concession agreement, which committed, and in that particular agreement, what was committed was $30 million over 20 years. The $117.5 million investment does not include likely revenue share payments above the annual minimums, nor does it estimate potential lease revenue from other wind developers interested in utilizing the facility during a sublease term, given the unique location of the New London Pier and scarcity of comparably suited facilities on the Eastern Seaboard. Again, the terms of any sublease by another wind developer, the terms of the 7-year option for NEO to continue leasing the facility per the HDA, and the terms of the 10-year options Terminal Operator Gateway has per the concession agreement all remain subject to future negotiations. This must be emphasized enough because it represents the significant promise of the state's expenditure and this pier. Given the conservative nature of projections and future opportunities to negotiate key terms, in my opinion, a near-term, approximately 20-year payback on a public infrastructure project is impressive and yet still neglects several important factors. For instance, it neglects the fact that the facility will be owned by the public forever and the financial benefits will accrue to the CPA and the state decade after decade without the need for further significant capital expenditures. Also, this analysis of direct financial benefits to the state does not quantify the direct value of income tax from the 180-plus construction workers building the project over the current 2-year period, nor the annual income tax from over 100 employees assembling the wind turbines. These are jobs that would not have occurred in Connecticut but for the project. It also does not take into consideration or include any indirect or induced jobs as a result of the project, which includes not only the in-state supply chain related to the construction project or the service jobs supporting these activities, but also the significant potential economic development resultant from wind component supply chain activities locating in Connecticut to be proximate to the turbine staging hub in New London. And also, this analysis does not include the direct benefit of the minimum $5.25 million in host community agreement payments that will be paid to the City of New London as a result of the first 7 years of the project. It also does not include the benefits of $5.2 million for off-site mitigation activities for habitat restoration, fish migration facilitation projects, and historic preservation, constituting benefits as well. As is clear by any number of measures, this infrastructure project scores very high in the financial return and benefits that will accrue to the state, as well as the many other direct and indirect, quantifiable and non-quantifiable benefits that the public will realize from this infrastructure project for decades into the future. I'd like to end this board. Any questions?
This is Dave Perla. I just have a couple of questions. I'd like to go over this a little bit because I see things slightly different. I agree with $178 million in bonding. That's fine. The number of $77.5 million that you attribute to NEO, actually $22.5 million of that was paid to the state through the Deepwater Wind Power Purchase Agreement. And it was the state who made a decision to contribute that to the state peer project. The other $50 million from NEO was for project costs because they are a minority partner in this. And even though they're one to truly benefit from all of this this money that we're putting into it. The $20 million in rent from NEO you mentioned, I think probably would have been $30 million over the 10 years, but they, I believe they funded $10 million in advance because of project shortfalls. So the that in lieu of rent, so rent was reduced to $20 million. The $15 million in facility equipment investment from Gateway is for Gateway investing in equipment for their own use and their own ownership. So the way I see it, the total for the State Pier project based on your notes here are $178 million for bonding, $50 million from NEO as their share as a partner, $22.5 million that the state decided to give to the State Pier project, and $10 million upfront from NEO in lieu of rent. So right now we're at $260.5 million. Now, that $10 million in lieu of rent, I could go either way you want to apply that. But what I'm looking at is incoming revenue versus that $260.5 million is $20 million for the next 10 years in rent from NEO and a $5 million minimum revenue share from Gateway. So over the next 10 years, we're taking in $25 million versus 260.5, and the difference, which is a whopping number, isn't really being made up in any of these other possibilities that may occur in the future. Am I correct in all of this?
This is David. No, that's a complete mischaracterization. I don't know how you can move I don't know how you can move private sector investment in a public facility that the public will then be able to reap the benefits from for decades into the public expenditure column that needs to be offset.
Okay, that David, we all know 22 years ago the pier was rebuilt, both sides, for over $50 million. I think it's going to need rebuilding probably another 20 years from now. I mean, this isn't going to last forever. But NEO is putting in private money because they're benefiting from this. I don't think we're gonna have rent from NEO for a $260.5 million project of something like
$260.5 million a year,
Dave.
Yeah, so we'll agree to disagree.
What would NEO's rent be if they didn't put the $50 million in to the project? Would it be $2 or $3 million a year? I don't think so. It would probably be $25 million a year or more. So I'm looking at money going in, whether it's private or public, and what's coming out. I see we're getting $25 million over 10 years, and I see NEO greatly benefiting from all of the money that was put into this project, not only by themselves, but by the state. I just think this difference here is way out of whack, but
I see that to be a complete mischaracterization, because it ignores the fact that this is a public asset. It ignores the fact that we have multiple opportunities of future negotiation. We have sublease potential, and I don't think it's fair to discount that potential for future revenue and claim that it does not offset the cumulative project cost and ignore that only a portion of that cost was a state investment.
Okay. So for the next 10 years, we've got $25 million in revenue.
Minimum.
Minimum, I agree. What do you what would you feel that number should be for a $260.5 million investment?
You keep saying $260.5 million. You can't use the numbers both ways, Dave. You're either curious about the return on the state's investment and the benefits associated with the cost to the state, which is $170 and change. You can't merge the columns to serve your talking point. It's 178 that we are looking to benefit from in the future. That benefit accrues in the minimum rent that we'll see in 10 years, the unknown direct revenue that will be a result from leases, subleases, extensions to be negotiated in the future, where we can capture market value at that time. And it ignores the myriad other direct, indirect, and induced revenue streams that accrue to the public. Just because that revenue is not coming to the Port Authority, payments to the City of New London, income tax payments to the state, those are all benefits resultant from this investment.
Well, I'm not arguing that point, Dave, and I'm just looking at numbers. You can't look at the state putting in 178 because they put in an additional 225 that they chose to.
That is inaccurate.
And their partnership put in the 50. So
yes, they put $50 million in private money into a public asset that we will own for generations.
Yes, and they put the $50 million in because they're truly going to benefit from this investment on their part, probably well in excess of the $50 million.
And we will benefit well in excess of the $178.
Well, we don't know that, David.
I think that Ulysses just demonstrated in his analysis that conservatively we see a return on that investment in 20 years, and that does not even begin to contemplate the potential upside when we see market-based rents and other indirect and induced revenue streams. We obviously disagree in our interpretation of these facts, but I'm confident that this is a sound investment for the state and will create return for generations.
And David, okay, can I just jump in? This is Alexandra.
What I see is $260.5 million. As of today, I don't know what it's going to be when you're done with this, David.
The private money as a state investment. I'm sorry, but that's incredibly disingenuous, and you keep doing it.
The private money is in lieu of them paying a fair rent for this facility. $3 million a year is not a fair rent. I mean,
so you agree that there's a significant potential upside in the market rent that the state will receive once the facility is completed and the uncertainty around construction is gone. You agree that there's potential upside.
I believe for the length of, certainly for the first 10 years, I don't see anything additional happening. If they continue for another seven, which I believe they have the option for, you know, maybe we could pick up a little bit more rent then. But I'm looking at the first 10 years because this is what we have firm numbers on.
And there is not a single public infrastructure project in the world that repays itself in benefits in 10 years. We're making an investment for...
That isn't what I'm saying, David. I'm saying we have very little return in the first 10 years, and we're hoping for more happening down the road. I mean, let's just be honest and say it. That's what it is. We don't know what it's going to be after 10 years. Hopefully a lot more. I'm a taxpayer, too. I've got a dollar or two probably of my money in this project, along with everybody else. So I'm hoping for the best. But let's be honest with what we're looking at. That's all. Thanks, David.
Yep, thank you. Alexandra, you had a comment?
No, that's fine. Thank you. If we're wrapping up, that's fine.
Any other comments or questions on Ulysses' report?
On that portion of my report, I'd like to end this portion of my report by updating you on some of our community education and state partner coordination activities. On August the 25th, the authority provided a presentation and site tour of the state peer project to executives of the Chelsea Groton Bank. On September the 14th, we joined representatives from Orsted and Eversource in a presentation to members of the Connecticut Power and Energy Society and the Northeast Energy and Commerce Association. This tour was conducted from the water side of the pier on a cross sound ferry during a conference of those associations. On September the 29th, we provided a presentation and site tour of the State Pier Project to a large delegation of members from the Rotary and Thames Clubs of New London. Additionally, at the request of Advanced CT, we have also provided presentations and tours of the New London project to delegations from Spain and Turkey. Let me stop here, and I will be back to provide an update regarding the State Pier Project under agenda item number 7, as well as the proposed pilotage rate increase under agenda item number 8.
Thank you, Ulysses. Any members of the board have any questions or comments on any of the items in the executive director's report?
This is John Flores. I have 2 points. First, I appreciate Ulysses mentioning and apologizing for the lateness of the material. I did feel that we need a little bit more time in being able to review these items, so I do appreciate the recognition, and I'm confident it won't occur again. The second point is I want to commend Ulysses on the breadth, comprehensiveness, and detail of his report. As a board member, it helps me understanding the operations of the authority, so I do appreciate that.
Thank you so much, John.
Larry McHugh. I also, as a new member of the board, I would like to thank Ulysses for a great report. For somebody new coming on to see the executive director doing that is excellent. So good job.
Appreciate it. And I will pass that on to our staff. We're very lean. As I indicated, we're punching well above our weight around here. But I really appreciate that, and we'll pass that on to our staff as well. Thank you so much.
Great. So I'm going to move on to the next item so that we keep things moving. We're going to give a brief summary of this morning's Finance Committee meeting. We met at 10 o'clock. The meeting was relatively brief. We went through our financials to date. No big surprises there at this stage of the fiscal year. I'll just make three points, one of which will transition into our resolution. The first point that I'll make is that we have now essentially closed the books on last fiscal year, and as was mentioned by Ulysses, Veronica and Lori and team are working very closely with our outside auditors on the FY22 audit, and we will have a meeting of audit compliance and governance shortly for them to interact with the board on that process. But I want to note that we did close the year with, I'm going to use round numbers, approximately $350,000 in the black. And so kudos to staff for managing expenses and giving us a nice cushion as we kind of move into a revenue positive situation with the port in short order. The other thing I want to mention, because it's come up at multiple board meetings, the question around legal expenses and the distribution between those that we drive through our operations and those that are driven by external factors. And just to remind folks, by that we mean investigations, external requests, so AG, Department of Justice, State Contracting Standards Board, Office of State Ethics, FOIA requests, et cetera. We now are comfortable with our accounting from last year, having gone back through all the invoices and making sure that we're coding them properly. And again, order of magnitude, rounded, our general operating legal expenses for the last fiscal year were approximately $40,000, and kudos to staff for managing that, given that that was an issue flagged by the auditors in the past. Our external legal expense, or our legal expenses driven by external forces, was approximately $170,000, and so that's obviously an area of concern for us. There's not a whole lot that we can do about it, and I want to be crystal clear. Those legal expenses are not because we are fighting these initiatives. Those legal expenses are to comply with these initiatives and make sure that we're providing the documents, being comprehensive, and doing so in a timely manner, as timely as is feasible given our staff capacity constraints. But we are constantly talking about that. We had some estimates at our last meeting. We now have those final numbers. And then the final thing that came out of the meeting, and I'll read the resolution momentarily, was a final reallocation of funds in our fiscal 22 budget to make sure that every line item ends neutral or in the black. And so largely driven by these external legal costs, we had to do some shuffling around. I will read that resolution, entertain a motion and second, and then we can discuss it. But before I do so, are there any general comments around our operating budget at the end of the first quarter of the fiscal year, or anything else that took place at the Finance Committee meeting? Okay, I will then read the resolution that was passed by the Finance Committee for consideration by the full board, and apologies in advance. It's a bit of a monologue, but I got to get it off the record. Resolve that in accordance with Section 4 of the Authority's operating procedures, in order to prevent any line item of the Authority's annual operating budget from containing or being projected to contain a deficit, Board hereby accepts the following modifications to the fiscal year 2022 budget as recommended by the Finance Committee at its October 18, 2022 regular meeting. In order to prevent budgetary overdrafts, the Connecticut Port Authority Finance Committee recommended to the Board, and the Board votes to approve the transfer of appropriation from the following accounts: $51,300 communications outreach sponsor in the amount of $45,700, $51,550 operations and maintenance in the amount of $4,908, $51,600 legal services internal in the amount of $60,254, $51,601 legal services project bond core permit in the amount of $35,284, $51,770 marketing business development other in the amount of $55,338, $52,601 water, sewer, fire, stormwater, New London State Pier in the amount of $17,696 for a total transfer out of those accounts or from those accounts of $219,180 to the following accounts: $50,100 salaries, $7,517, $5,200 payroll taxes, $9,690, $5,300 fringe benefits, $8,921, $51,400 contractual services, $14,124. Here's the big one: $51,602 legal services external matters, $171,275. $51,730 mileage reimbursement, $548. $52,250 office supplies, $2,038. $52,550 telephone internet, $3,166. $53,000 depreciation expense, $1,901. Total to these accounts of $219,180, resulting in a modified annual operating budget for fiscal year 2022 with a net surplus of $388,507. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved, David.
Moved by John Johnson. Is there a second?
Second. The other John.
Second by John. Yep, second by John Flores. Thank you. Any discussion, comments, or questions? Okay, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, next item on the agenda is MOU with Office of Policy and Management. For expediency's sake, I'm just going to introduce this briefly. We've talked about this at length. We have our ongoing MOU with the Office of Policy and Management where they support us on fiscal and financial matters. We have extended that multiple times. We have, you know, our last discussion was around getting it through our new finance director coming on. Now we're talking about, you know, some support from them for the audit. We're in agreement with OPM that we would continue that relationship through the end of this calendar year. I'm optimistic, cautiously optimistic, that that will be the last extension based on where we are and the great work that Veronica and team are doing. But, you know, I don't want to make a guarantee. I will read the resolution, entertain a motion in second, and then we can discuss. Resolved that the executive director is authorized, empowered, and directed for and on behalf of the authority to execute and deliver an amendment to that certain memorandum of understanding, the MOU, with an effective date of September 6, 2019, by and between the authority and the Office of Policy and Management as amended to further extend the end date of the MOU to December 31, 2022, as described in the form attached here too as the exhibit to agenda item number 6, and to take such reasonable and necessary actions as are reasonably required in furtherance thereof. Is there a motion to extend the MOU with OPM to year's end calendar?
So moved, David. And I got to jump off, David.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks, John. Okay, moved by fine. John. Is there a second? Grant, thank you. Seconded. Any discussion, questions, or comments?
David, since John dropped off, we might want another motion.
Okay, fair. Yes. Grant, I'll take yours as a motion if you're okay with that. Yeah.
Move mine up to the motion.
Okay. Is there a second?
Tom Patton, second.
Great. Thanks, Tom. Any discussion, questions? Okay. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, Ulysses, I'll hand it over to you for item 7, State Pier Infrastructure Improvement Project Update.
Thank you so much. Currently, I'm happy to report that construction activity continues at each of the major work fronts, including number 1, the uplands, number 2, northeast bulkhead and adjacent heavy lift platform, number 3, central wharf and south wall, number 4, dredging, and number 5, state pier combi wall and adjacent heavy lift platform. The state pier's combi wall is effectively an underwater retaining or foundation wall, which is also known as the toe wall, and you will hear us referring to the toe wall sometimes pretty often. Across the upland area, however, drainage structures, concrete pipe, water main infrastructure, and electrical duct bank installation continues. The dense graded aggregate, or what we refer to as DGA placement, has also commenced. However, supply chain challenges continue to be tracked. For instance, key attention at this time is focused on delivery of the fenders and electrical equipment. Fender panels are scheduled for arrival in January 2023, and transformers, switchgear, disconnect switches, and other electrical components are scheduled for arrival from early 2023 into summer of 2023. With respect to the northeast bulkhead, or the delivery berth, the last 4 concrete slabs and curbs were poured in September, completing the heavy lift platform. The next and final step for the heavy lift platform will be placement of the DGA material that I spoke of before and installation of fenders. In short,
The Northeast bulkhead and heavy lift platform are progressing on schedule with substantial completion targeted for February 2023. Moving to the Central Wharf. Central Wharf field placement or embankment is 95% complete. Final impact driving of the remaining pipe and sheet pile is planned for the balance of this month. When it comes to dredging, on-site dredging commenced during the first week of October. The current dredging schedule indicates works continuing in the Northeast Bulkhead delivery berth through November, moving into the turning basin during the months of December and January of 2022, of January of 2023, and completing the State Piers installation berth in late January 2023. Moving on to the State Pier, probing and identification of shallow and deep obstructions along the entire 1,000-foot length of the underwater retaining foundation wall was completed. However, obstructions were found at elevations below mudline at depths of minus 60 to minus 65 feet. Driving of the foundation wall is underway and currently scheduled to complete in early February 2023. This is the toll wall that I mentioned to you earlier. In the adjacent heavy lift platform, removal of the underlying riprap and other existing timber piles and concrete pile caps has been now completed. Additional back slab demolition work was uncovered during the summer and subsequently removed during the months of August and September. State Pier heavy lift platform work continues to represent the critical path for completion of the project. The CPA, together with the project team, has commenced planning for transition from construction completion to commencement of vessel arrival. The team is collectively committed in alignment with achieving the current plans for the South Fork Wind Farm, which include vessels arrival and delivery berth summer of 2023, and on-site staging and pre-assembly activities commencing in the upland and central wharf. The Northeast Bulkhead substantial completion forecast of February 2023 and the upland central wharf substantial completion forecast of April 2023 are on track to accommodate terminal operations. Through the month of September, approximately $126 million or 67% of the project has been completed, excluding the $32 million cost for dredging, which is also underway and on schedule. Let me now turn this over to our contract administrator, Marlon Peterson, for a more in-depth briefing and discussion regarding the GMP Amendment Number 8. Marlon?
Thank you, Executive Director Hammond. Again, we apologize for the late delivery of the comprehensive documents associated with the GMP, as alluded to earlier. The project team is attempting to minimize the cost increase and schedule impact by means of compiling existing data, conducting additional tests when necessary, assessing alternative solutions, ultimately to determine the preferred way forward. Amendment number 8 has a cost, which we'll go through the various details. It also has a bearing on the project completion dates and corresponding liquidated damages. Consistent with the project improvements, as Executive Director just laid out, the early work GMP Amendment number 8 is recommended for approval to incorporate CMR change order number 6 into the construction manager at risk contract, and therefore enable the changes to be incorporated into the works. The total cost of this change, as distributed to the board, is $7,471,779. The project team will endeavor I'm going to go into substantial detail, understanding when the material was distributed. Overall, the change is comprised of 12 line items that span 8 of the key trade contractor packages. And for purposes of this discussion, the 12 items have been summarized into six key components. Four of the components relate to specific work or equipment or requirements that have allowances for line items where appropriate. In today's supply chain, they give you a date when they tell you it will be fabricated and shipped, although they don't hold that date and they update you as it goes. So in this particular case, there are certain allowances for those potential changes as the months roll forward. Two of the other components have allowances that are generated based on the available data for the works that are imminent to commence or are likely to be required in the very near term. These particular allowance items pertain to removal of deep subsurface obstructions, again, as alluded to by the executive director, the introduction of inclined micropiles, and the delivery of key electrical components. So not to go into more detail of those six items. $2.4 million is an allowance to provide the micropiles at the northeast bulkhead annex area and the south wall anchor. Those are alluded to previously as micropiles. They address an apparent lack of what's known as tension capacity, which is required for the structural stability of the wall's foundation. Our engineer is going through a number of tests to finalize the spacing and the distribution. And once those tests are done, we will then have a reconciliation of the actual cost incurred versus the allowance. We will then record that and bring that to the board for your information. The next item is a $1.4 million allowance to address the removal of deep obstructions along the State Pier Foundation, or as Executive Director Hammond alluded to, the toe wall. As alluded to, the probing has identified there are obstructions. However, not every obstruction needs to be removed, as certain obstructions are, if you would, as you drive an element into the earth, it sometimes moves that rock or otherwise out of the way. But in certain cases, it's bigger than the pile and it can't be. So in those cases where we have estimated based on available data, we have made an allowance for the removal of those obstructions. Once the toe wall is complete, and for that matter on a monthly basis as we go through the balance of the works, as you heard, will be complete in early February. Again, a reconciliation of the actual number of those obstructions versus the allowance will be performed. So in short, we are agreeing on a unit price per obstruction, and then once the actual number is defined between now and February, we will then do that reconciliation. Third item is a $1.3 million cost for additional reinforcing material, or rebar as we call it, which is placed within the heavy lift slabs or platforms, concrete platforms at both the Northeast Bulkhead Relieving Platform and at the State Pier. At the time the contract was awarded, the material was purchased based on the weight of the rebar as included in the design documents. In the construction process, after design is completed, the fabricator creates shop drawings, and the shop drawings are specific to the quantity and the weight of the material. We introduced additional steel material in order to obtain the necessary capacity for each slab. Therefore, we need to reimburse the contractor for the additional steel. Item four is also a $1.3 million increase, and that is for the State Pier back slab demolition, again alluded to previously in the works that have been completed. This is necessary. The back slab demolition ultimately removes an unanticipated pre-existing set of timber piles and concrete foundations and unsuitable soil to excavate down to +3. And when we then bring it back up to +6 with suitable soil and then from +6 to +9 for DGA, it will provide a continuous uniform heavy lift transport corridor from the installation berth, i.e. the south berth, or excuse me, the previous State Pier berth, across to the central wharf. And in closing, the last two are smaller items. There's a $700,000 cost required for modifications to electrical equipment, disconnect switches, transformers, tower packs, pedestals, and those type of items, which will allow the on-site staging and pre-assembly. Again, a number of those are allowances as the offshore equipment has been refined over the last year. Those adjustments need to be made so that, again, the state Pier will be a unique U.S. plus European gauge facility to accommodate the nacelles and other elements as they are brought from the European fabricators. And then lastly, there's approximately $500,000 line item for the handling of contaminated groundwater and the processing of that through our on-site treatment plant. For your information, approximately $300,000 of it is cost to date that has been completed for installation of drainage infrastructure in the north and eastern portions of the site. The remaining $200,000 is the allowance for the drainage works in the west and in the south. The balance of the items, as detailed in change order 6, are all less than $50,000, and they're included in the amendment as distributed to you. So those six items provide the summary level of the overall $7.5 billion change. All together, once this change order 6 is included in amendment number 8, the total cost of the construction manager at risk contract would be increased to $225,146. As alluded to before, it does have a schedule and an LD component, so just to take just a minute or two to highlight that for you. Because of the subsurface obstruction issues and the back slab demolition issues and the electrical supply chain items, we are promoting or recommending an adjustment to the substantial completion dates. We have substantial completion A remains February 28th, 2023. Again, as alluded to by the executive director, that is for the Northeast Bulkhead, its heavy lift platform. Substantial completion B is for those areas plus the south wall, the central wharf, and the upland areas by April 10th. So that way, completion A and B in February and April will enable the commencement of the terminal operations as planned. We then have a substantial completion C, which would be June 30th, and that is for the State Pier heavy lift platform and the foundation or the tow wall. As you heard, the tow wall will complete in February. That allows the dredging to be done, and that will also allow the State Pier platform to then be finished in the following months of March, April, May, heading into June. So substantial completion C would be June 30th, and then substantial completion D is September 30th, which is the final commissioning of a couple of pieces of electrical equipment, some of the disconnect switches, et cetera, for the shore-to-ship Cavitech equipment. Final acceptance would then be October 30th, 1 month later. We expect very little on-site work once the substantial completion C is achieved, other than, of course, the receipt of electrical equipment, installing that equipment and commissioning it, which would take us out to September. And lastly, consistent with those sets of completion dates, the liquidated damages would commence as of substantial completion date C. So as of June 30th is the last date. If they do not finish all of the works in A, B, and C up to June 30th on July 1st, liquidated damages would commence as defined in the contract. And the same with final acceptance that is required as of October 30th. Therefore, if that is not achieved, liquidated damages for final acceptance would start as of October 31st. So this is a blend of our construction completion dates being integrated with the requirements of terminal operations such that it's a win-win solution for the partners, for the team members. Ultimately, that is the detailed listing of change order 6, which is recommended to be approved as part of amendment number 8. Thank you. Back to you, Executive Director.
Okay, that concludes our report, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, let me add some bit here. This is David. I think the most important thing to note is that this does not increase the overall budget of the project from the 255 that we've been operating under since July of this year. And let me be clear in explaining sort of how that's about, because it is integral in the board's assessment of this proposal and subsequent approval thereof. The way that this $7 million and change is funded is from three sources. You will recall we had a modest contingency outstanding after our last amendment of $2.5 million or so. We were also able to tighten up multiple soft cost budgets because things that were, soft cost actuals, I guess I would say, because the team had made estimates around various soft cost line items. Some of those line items came in lower than budgeted, which freed up some resources of previously encumbered, previously unencumbered but anticipated soft costs that will not materialize. The third bucket, though, which you all need to understand, is the project escrow currently holds funding adequate to pay the lease from the CPA of the NECR rail lands for the entirety of the 12-year period, 2 years of construction and 10 years of first-term utilization by NEO. This proposal includes the shifting of the last 5 years of those lease payments to Port Authority's future operating expenses. Ulysses, Andrew, the team, they've been running the numbers. They've been projecting out operating expenses with various escalators. They've looked at future operating costs, future revenues. They've looked at, holdover surpluses like we generated this past fiscal year and the one before that. And they're confident that we will have the resources to do that. But I want to be very clear about this, because when that lease was executed and authorized by this board, it was under the expectation that the totality of those funds would be in escrow. We are suggesting that in order to cover the anticipated costs, and as Marlon described, some of those are known costs associated with, demolition and removal of components of State Pier that were uncovered, that were unknown. Some of them are estimates associated with the projected cost of micropile installation, deep obstruction removal at the tow wall, et cetera. And so the proposal from the project team and from the staff to us, to the board, is use the remaining contingency, use the funds that were freed up from soft cost tightening, and defer 5 years of lease payments, the last 5 years, 2028 to 2033, to future operating budgets, freeing up the capital necessary to execute this agreement without any additional state dollars. I just want to make sure everyone is clear about that. I want to make sure everyone's clear that the bottom line impact of this amendment as proposed is no net new additional money from the state, but I also want to make sure that the board is clear how this modifies your understanding of our obligation for lease payments 5 years from now as it relates to the railroad parcel.
David, and say, this is Tom, say one more time, that those annual lease payments are what? How much?
Yes. Yeah. So they escalate. They are approximately they're between $500,000 and $600,000 a year, right? They go up over time, and so it is 5 years of those payments at actually by that time at the end of the lease they're between $600,000 and $700,000. That is the order of magnitude. Let's call it $650,000 for the sake of discussion. And Andrew can certainly circulate the lease schedule associated with that, but that would be an operating expense that we would need to budget for and anticipate in fiscal years 29 through 34. Other questions?
Sorry, it's Tom one more time. And do we think then that this final amendment, the $7 million, do we believe that this
does get us and is sufficient to resolve any known or unknown obstructions or issues, or are there potential for more surprises in terms of
construction? Yeah. So there's no short or easy answer to that. These are, you know, estimates from our team on the anticipated costs associated with these buckets that we know are out there now based on work from the last few months. You know, we can ask Marlin, but I doubt that we could or are in a position to say definitively that, you know, we won't still uncover something else, right? We're still not out of the ground. I will share with the board, as Marlin sort of alluded to, related to the relationship between some of these expenses and design, some of these expenses as construction, there may be claims that we have in order to recoup some of these funds, but that is very much uncertain and very much out in the future. But we are working within the context that we all understand there, you know, we don't have access to any more funds beyond this point, right? We have exhausted our available funds as approved and authorized and allocated to us by the state. And we are taking, you know, we are proposing to take a big move in, you know, taking on that obligation for those rent payments in the future. We don't have any other tools like that available to us beyond this. And the contractor understands that, I guess, is something I should add.
Thank you.
Marlin, do you want to add any of your perspective on that?
Certainly. The obstructions, our contractor over the last 2 months performed a great deal of probing to understand where the shallow and deep obstructions are. So again, we have made an estimate on the number that will be able to be driven through. And those that won't be able to be driven through will have to then take that piece of equipment out and move another one in to address it, and that's when the additional costs accrue. So this is an estimate. It is possible that we would have to come back to the board for an adjustment, but that is, the chairman said, without available funds, that's not possible. So if we run into too many deep obstructions, we may have to look at other potential solutions. But the risk is there for more obstructions than our estimate. There is also the issue that the micro piles that we're installing, if for some reason the test results that we are performing on the in-situ soil come back not favorable, that's another allowance. However, those works are being, the solutions are being developed, and we will be implementing those solutions over the next 2 to 3 months so that when we move into the winter, and then if the next board meeting is in December, for example, we should be into these. We'll be another 2 months down the road on the tow wall, so we'll be able to give you a very clear indication of where we are at that time. And the micropile solution will also be implemented. Therefore, the design solution will be known, so we can update you. So it's a very fluid situation, hence the reason we were having troubles getting the estimates to you. We are trying to do our best to ensure that we have the most cost-effective solution possible. Is there risk? Yes, there is. We have, again, the contractor, the terminal operator, the port authority, and the engineer all working towards an effective solution. So the best we can do is tell you that we think we have the right estimates. However, Mother Nature is not always kind. And in fact, in State Fair, it's been complicated. Nonetheless, we think we have the right game plan to finish.
And I'll just add level one thing briefly. Sorry, go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say your level of confidence that you've got everything addressed.
I would like to tell you two-thirds, so just on 70%. I'd like to tell you I was at 85, but we've got too much of the tow wall still to finish. The micropile design solution is still being tested. anything higher than that would be inappropriate.
And I'll just add briefly, while the team is working diligently and Marlon is and his folks are putting a lot of time and energy in this, and Ulysses and the CPA team are certainly doing the same, while they are, you know, looking to mitigate the impacts of these things that arise, they're also looking at ways to, you know, find savings elsewhere. So, you know, some of these, we've been having some pretty creative conversations around, like, you know, where the obstructions are most significant, what are the workarounds, right? Are there any ways in which we can sort of avoid them rather than have to get through them? Those options are limited, but there are a couple places where there may be some modest tweaks of design that create much greater savings in avoiding obstructions than they do compromise, you know, facility utility. So all those conversations are taking place simultaneously. You know, our hope at this meeting was to give the contractor some breathing room, essentially, with allowances based on our estimates on best available knowledge today, so that they can kind of plow through and hopefully allow us to all come together in December with good news that we exceeded expectations, but not have to, you know, come back to you all between now and then, you know, doing this incrementally. And so hence the approach of the quote-unquote allowances for anticipated expenses.
David, this is John, and this issue has arisen because when this project was first created, they didn't do the testing that they could have done to figure this one out.
So Marlon can speak more to this, but the area where these obstructions arise in particular was not accessible, right? It was under the riprap support structure of State Pier, and so it was moving the riprap out of the way and then driving sheet piles and pipe piles down there, you know, some of which are 80, 90 feet deep. And so we have a lot better information now based on the probing that has been able to take place, but there were things that needed to get out of the way to enable that probing to take place. Marlon, is that a fair summary, or do you want to amend that at all?
No, exactly right. For those that may not have been out to State Pier, there is the heavy lift platform that has been demolished, if you would, and as part of that program, the riprap underneath State Pier has been pulled away and removed so that the tow wall can be driven. So we didn't have the opportunity to do that in a pre-construction arrangement. So that's why one of the pieces that the contractor has done as an early action is to do that probing. And unfortunately, due to not only the riprap there, but also the subsurface rock conditions are not uniform. They don't follow a very standardized slope. And because of the Thames River, actually we have, I believe we have two rock formations. You have one sloping off as it goes towards the Thames River, so it's, if you would, it slopes down to the east, but you also have the bigger, broader rock formation that is the Long Island Sound, which slopes off from the north to the south, and it just those appear to both be influencing the area under the State Pier, so it makes for a very variable tow wall installation because you've got the different sloping rock and you also have the obstructions. So it's working through those details as we ensure that the built structure achieves the necessary heavy lift capacity that the offshore wind industry requires. So we're working through it, but once we've pulled that material away, it allowed us to do more testing and more refined testing along the entire alignment, and we took the contractor took that opportunity to be better informed so that we can come up and on a case-by-case basis as we work through the next 2.5 months to finish the tow wall in the most cost-effective manner. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I guess the issue is, though, we didn't know what the amount was for those who were involved in this project originally, that perhaps it would have been reasonable having a contingency in anticipation, not knowing what was out there, that this could cost some money, which is now costing us $7 million.
That is true, although I would argue that if you knew that data then versus now, again, you're driving the pile. It's the question of how best to remove the obstruction. The obstruction was always there, and you were going to have to remove it at some point in time. So if you identified them all, you know, a contractor would have put a price in there to do that at the bidding time. In theory, yes. The cost would have been there anyway, so yeah, there may be a premium on it because it's a post bid number, but the cost still would have been there.
Okay.
I will say, to be just somewhat positive, we've seen really good productivity over the last few weeks, and I don't want to jinx things. I'm knocking on wood, and it doesn't change, you know, our current estimates, but there are reasons to be hopeful. Based on activities at the site these last few weeks. Other questions, comments?
Hey, David, it's Brian. So, you know, I understand the explanation of the reasons for the changes. That's pretty well documented. And what we have in front of us, and I understand your explanation of the shift in funds, the freeing up of capital to future lease payments in operating budget. Is that latter point documented here anywhere?
Yes. Marlon will have to, or Ulysses, kind of tell you exactly which tab on the spreadsheet it is in. But there is a tab that shows soft costs, and you will see the distinction between budgeted, actual, and remainder on several lines. And one of those lines that you'll see is on the NECR lease line. You'll see $3.6 million or so shifted to the remaining line, but you'll see each of the other soft cost lines that we were able to free up resources from as well, because the actuals were less than budgeted. And I apologize, my computer actually just died, and I'm out of my office and don't have my power cord, so I don't have
David? David, this is Marlon. For the board, we put our letter of recommendation. A lot of what we've just gone through is in that recommendation, and we will add a table of soft costs with that you're just describing. So we'll add there's two tables in there currently. We'll add a third table that specifically lists the soft costs, and we'll show that shift, so it will be clearly documented.
All right, thank you.
Other questions or comments? Okay, I will actually ask Andrew to read, or Ulysses, to read the resolution, because, again, I apologize, my computer just died and I cannot open it. And then I will entertain a motion in a second, and then if anyone thinks of a question or a comment between now and then, you'll have another opportunity to raise it.
The resolution reads that the executive director be and hereby is authorized, empowered, and directed for and on behalf of the Connecticut Port Authority to negotiate, execute, and enter into an 8th Amendment to that certain construction at risk early work guaranteed maximum price agreement with Kiewit Infrastructure Company in connection with construction activities at the State Pier for the services and amounts as substantially described in the exhibits to agenda item number 7A, and to take such reasonable and necessary actions that the executive director deems to be in the best interest of the authority to execute and deliver any and all other reasonable and necessary documents in furtherance thereof.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
I'll move that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll move that resolution.
Thank you, Grant. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
I think I heard Brian. Was that Brian?
No, that was somebody else.
No. Okay. Sorry. Say the second again. Paul, thank you. Any other questions or discussion? Okay. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you all. Ulysses, I think the next item on the agenda was pilot commissioning.
Yes, it is. And this item is on the agenda for your information and discussion. The current pilot tariff rate schedule is set to expire December 31st of this year. The Interport Pilot Association submitted to the Pilot Commission a new five-year rate schedule starting January 1 of 2023. The Pilot Commission has reviewed and concurs with the proposal. In March, New York State approved a request from the New York licensed pilots to increase the pilotage fees for the MOA waters of Long Island Sound. The Connecticut Pilots and the Interport Pilots Association discussed their proposal with the New York pilots, and both groups agreed that this proposal increase is reasonable, fair, and should have no negative impact on industry and future business. Connecticut Pilots and the Interport Pilots Association understand that the MOA allows for Connecticut and New York to have separate rates, but recognize that it is highly desirable to have a unified rate structure between the two groups and are requesting the same rate schedule as New York for the MOA waters of Long Island Sound. This proposed rate increase must be published for comment for 30 days and then subsequently come before the board, let's say in its December, for its December review and approval. So that is basically what we're looking at right now. We just wanted to tee this up because we still have to go out and publish this for 30 days, but if in fact there was any discussion or questions you had about this particular rate increase, you have material also that was submitted to you for your review on the history of the pilotage rate increase. And so you have that before you, and if there are any questions, Joe Salvatore also serves as the staff to the Pilot Commission. He is here as well, so we're ready to entertain any questions if you have any.
Yeah, this is Dave Perillo. I have one question. In the past, any rate increases of state pilot rates had to go to reg review. Do we no longer have to go to reg review?
The authority, I believe, because it's a quasi-public entity, does not have to go through the state process. Such as what DOT would have to do. In lieu of that, they must post it 30 days for comment in the Connecticut Law Journal.
David, it's Tom back on.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? And Ulysses, maybe you can just share with folks when you plan on posting it so that if they do have questions or comments, that they can try and get them to you before that time?
Within the next 2 weeks, we plan to post.
Okay.
Yes.
So if anyone thinks of a question that they have on it, you've got, you know, a week before they get posted. You know, still subject to change, but if any substantive changes are made by the board after it's posted, we would likely have to go through that process again, and we would have a hard time meeting the December expiration. other comments or questions now, and Dave will get back to you with a definitive answer on the rate review, but my guess is Joe's right on that one.
David, do you want us to vote on whether we have any objection to having the same rate as in New York? Because I think that makes sense, but I don't know if you need to vote now or if we noticed it.
I don't think so. I mean, I believe, you know, ultimately after the public comment period, it will come back to this board for action. I don't think we need to have a sense of the board. I mean, I think we're providing the opportunity for comment at this time so that we limit the chances that we have substantive changes post comment period. But I don't think an action is necessary in order for Ulysses to initiate that process.
Okay.
Other comments or questions? Okay, Ulysses, I know we have New Haven next. I just would ask you, we're kind of running low on time. If that is a time-sensitive action, then we should get to it right now. If it is not, we should hold it for next meeting, but I defer to you and Joe on that.
We have to go to the Bond Commission on this one, so this one can be taken up at the next meeting.
Okay. Good. I think for time's sake, we should probably let people get back to the rest of their day. And again, I don't have the agenda in front of me. Was there anything else before old business?
Just David, maybe a motion to table.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Is there a motion to table the New Haven Harbor discussion and resolution for till next meeting?
So move.
And move by Grant. Is there a second?
Second, Tom.
Second by Tom Gill. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, very briefly in old business, I just wanted to touch on a couple things. First was meeting format. I know we talked a lot last time about trying to get back to in-person meetings. Our hope was to do that this month. We had some challenges getting a meeting room, and we are committed to having an in-person meeting in short order. Our hope, and I'll follow up with folks after this, but our hope would be to have the next two in-person meetings in New Haven and Bridgeport and provide those communities a more robust opportunity to share a bit about what's going on in their ports and really kind of delve in a bit and provide the board an opportunity to learn more about the activities in those communities. So that's the intent, but I wanted to just kind of make sure everyone hears me that we are still committed to shifting back to in-person meetings in short order, but we had some challenges doing so this time. I also want to note, you know, we had to cancel an HR meeting last month. We've had a hard time finding a date that will have quorum, but we are working on that and confident that meeting will take place before, let's say, you know, mid-November or so. And so you'll see a meeting date announcement on that in the near future. And then finally, in old business, you know, I want to report back to the board because we discussed it at length at our last couple meeting or at our last meeting and at the last two meetings of the Finance Committee, as well as this morning, related to the trip to Denmark that I represented Port Authority on, with Gateway, Ørsted, Eversource, and Advanced CT, the economic development private arm of the state. Incredible set of meetings, very important and impactful in what we're doing. I was hoping to show pictures today, being in person. Obviously, we don't have the opportunity to do so I'll do that at our next meeting. But we did have a great tour of a comparable wind installation hub. We got to see some tower sections being assembled. We got to see a wind turbine installation vessel at port. We got to see the movements throughout. We had some very good, productive discussions with Gateway and Siemens around those goods movements, et cetera. And so I think by all accounts, it was very informative and will certainly help us
facilitate smooth operations of our facility once it is up and running early next year. And I wanted to share with you all the ultimate final cost of that trip, which we had estimated, as you will likely recall, around potentially $4,000 per person. I was as efficient and economical, or I don't know the right way to say that, but as possible. The total cost, and I split all meals, I got my own receipts, et cetera, et cetera. The total cost for that trip for me from the Port Authority budget was $1,508. And that covered ground expenditure, flight, hotel. I stayed at a cheaper hotel away from everyone else to save us all some money. And so hopefully everyone will agree that that was a prudent and productive use of a very limited number of our resources. Any questions or comments about that?
I agree, David. Tom, I agree. It's great opportunity to see a port in action, and you did it at a cost that was quite frugal.
Cheers. Yeah, I really can't wait to show you guys the pictures. It's incredible. I mean, one of the most eye-opening things was there was multiple turbines out in the port, many of which were 8 megawatts, which has been the sort of going size as of late. A couple of them were 11 megawatts, which are the same size that are going to be delivered through New London for this first couple projects. The size difference between 8 megawatts and 11 was just unbelievable. It's not like a 30% increase. It's like double in size. And the magnitude of kind of what will be at this facility really, became real and exciting, visually very exciting. And I should note, Felix and the mayor on, the community that this port was located in on the western shore of Denmark was a small historic community, not unlike New London. And obviously it's not exclusively resultant to wind, but there was a lot of activity at the port and the downtown was vibrant, right? The main street was vibrant. It was really, really encouraging to see the symbiotic relationship between this community and its waterfront resources. And, that's a big part of what we're all working towards here. So any other old business? Any new business? Okay, with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
A move.
Moved by Grant, is there a second?
Second, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. Meeting is adjourned at 1:50 p.m. Thank you all for the time, and we'll be in touch with updates and look forward to talking to you all and seeing you soon.